Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanichim Began Eden. Amen.
Daf Mem Het. Today's daf has been dedicated by Chaim Seton, a live member of our Dafter Mishiur, in honor of Rabbi Ezra Saban, another live member, actually, who sits right next to Chaim every morning. God bless them both with continued success in their endeavor to finish Shas. Today's daf is also being studied, the Elul Nishmat Avraham Ben Esther, and the Elul Nishmat Moreno Verabbeinu Chacham Baruch Rafael Ben Miriam Ruach Hashem Tanichem Began Eden. Amen. We are starting the fourth perek of Masechet Shabbat, perek Bamet Tomnin, just as an introduction to remind ourselves of the concept of Hatmana. Hatmana means to insulate a pot of food. There's two types of insulations. There's an insulation with something that is Mosif Haval, that generates heat. That means the actual insulation itself produces heat. That type of insulation is Asur either on Friday afternoon and certainly on Shabbat. The reason why that type of insulation is Asur on Friday afternoon, as we learned previously in the Gemara, is because they were concerned that you might come to insulate in remitz. Remitz would be hot ashes that are also Mosif Haval. And there might be coals in those ashes, and the concern was that on Shabbat, you might come to stoke the coals. So therefore, Hatmana Bedavar HaMosif Haval Asur Afilu Be'ereb Shabbat Gezera Shema Yatminenu Beremetz. That is the Mosif Haval. Then you have another type of Hatmana Bedavar She'enu Mosif Haval, that it does not generate heat. For example, you make insulation with a cloth. A regular cloth doesn't generate on its own heat. You're just trying to maintain the heat that is in the pot already. Hatmana bedavar she'enu mosif aval is mutar be'erev Shabbat. It is permissible to insulate pots like that on Friday afternoon. However, on Shabbat itself, even hatmana bedavar she'enu mosif aval is asur. We learned earlier the reason for that as well. The concern was Shemme Yirtia, meaning you might come to insulate your pot on Shabbat, and since you're interested in keeping it hot, you might come to realize that actually the pot cooled off. The concern was you might come to put it on the fire, and therefore it's a gezerah. So on Shabbat, all sorts of hatmana are forbidden. Ben Mosif Aval, Ben Enu Mosif Aval. Erev Shabbat mutar davka only bedavar she'enu mosif aval. The first Mishnah in the Perek is going to discuss and analyze for us what types of items are considered mosif aval items and what type of items are enu mosif aval. And then obviously we plug it in the certain scenarios. The Mishnah starts b'me tomnin u'b'me en tomnin. Rashi. A person that's taking his pot off the kira, meaning it's been on the kira, let's say, on Friday. It's been cooking on the stove. Now you want to take it off. You don't want to leave it on the stove the whole Shabbat. But you want to insulate it. You want to keep the heat. That she continues, Ultumna bedavar acher. You want to insulate it with something else. Ve'amu chachamim en tumnim bedavar mosif haval. You're not allowed to use something that generates heat, even on Friday. Only something that maintains heat. So the question is the Mishnah, what is that item that generates heat that is forbidden even on Erev Shabbat? So the Gemara says, lo begefet. You cannot use gefet. Rashi says gefet is psonet shel betabad shel shemen. It seems after they used to press the olives. So in the press, there's like the remnants of all the olive. That would include, let's say, the crushed peels and the pits and all the remnants. Those items actually generate heat. For example, if you have a heap of those things, then you take a pot and you stick it in the gefet, shel shemen or shel zetim, so it can actually produce heat. That would be forbidden. That's called gefet. Lo bezevel. Zevel literally means garbage. Garbage, when it's decomposing, is combustible, and therefore it produces heat. It would be forbidden to stick the pot. Obviously, the pot is covered. Lo bemelach, not with salt, also produces. Velo beseed, that would be limestone. Velo behol, and not with sand. And these items, the Mishnah says, ben lahin, ben yeveshin. These items, it doesn't matter whether they're moist or whether they're dry. In both cases, they produce haval. Rashi says, yesh bem haval harbeh, yoter. Oh, that's actually the next Rashi we'll see. So in these items, it doesn't make a difference. Ben lahin, ben yeveshin. Next case. Velo beteben. Temen would be straw. Velo bezagin. Zagin, Rashi says, psolet shel yekev yayin. That would be, let's say, the remnants of the grape seeds.
Skins.
Or grape skins. Okay, that makes more sense. Which means, when they're making wine, so they crush the grape, and they have the remnants. It's the same thing, what we talked about by the olives, so this is it by the grapes. That's called zagin. Velo bemochin. Mochin, Rashi says, kol davar rach. Any soft material is called mochin. He says, kigon semer gefen, that would be like cotton. Vetelishe semer rach shel behema, that would be, let's say, the wool that you pull off an animal. Vigirat begadim belulim, or let's say, worn out clothes. All those items are soft. It's called mochin. Those items are also asur to use as hatmanah. Again, you're taking these garments, let's say, and you're wrapping around the pot in order to insulate it. Velo ba'asabin, nor may you use grass. Bizman shehen lahin. However, all these last items that we mentioned are only forbidden when they are moist, because only then do they produce haval. Aval tomnim bahem kesheem yeveshim. However, when they are dry, so they don't have the ability to produce haval, and therefore they would be permissible on Erev Shabbat. So basically, our Mishnah discussed different cases. Some are asur, whether they're wet or dry, and the last cases of the Mishnah are asur only if they are wet, moist, but if they're dry, they cannot produce haval. That's the cases of the Mishnah. So now the Gemara asks, Ibayinu. The Gemara has a question. Gefet shel zetim tanam. You said gefet shel zetim. That is mosif haval. Haval de shemshemin shapir dameh. Is the implication that, but of sesame, meaning when you're making sesame seed oil, so you crush these sesame seeds as well. So is the Mishnah telling us that only gefet shel zetim produces haval, but gefet shel shemshemin, no? Is that the proper implication? Or dilma de shemshemin tenam. Or maybe when the Mishnah says the word gefet, it meant gefet of sesame. Because the Mishnah really didn't tell us what type of gefet. Gefet literally means the residue of it. So it can be the residue either of olives, or it can be the residue of the sesame. So the second side of the Mishnah is, maybe when the Mishnah said gefet, it means shtishum shemin of sesame, vechot sheken de zetim. And then I could say all the more so, because it seems shemshemin don't generate as much heat as zetim. So if the Mishnah is talking about shemshemin, and it's telling me that that's considered a mosif haval item, then kol sheken on zetim. Or is the Mishnah mean, no, gefet shel zetim, and only zetim, and not shemshemin. Again, the question over here is not a question in mitziut, meaning it's not a question over here in reality of things, does gefet of shemshemin of sesame produce heat? That's not the question over here. That's obvious. You could check that out yourself. The question is, does that heat that it produces considered enough to be considered mosif haval? That's the sheila over here. And what's that going to be dependent on? How you learn the Mishnah. If you learn gefet shel zetim, we know produces more heat than gefet shel shemshemin. So if the Mishnah is referring to gefet shel zetim, it means only zetim and not shemshemin. If it means gefet shel shemshemin, Kol sheken gefet shel zetim. That's the Gemara's question. Tashema, come and listen. Da amar Rabbi Zera. Mishum had de Rabbi Yanai. Rabbi Zera came along and said from one of the rabbis in the yeshiva of Rabbi Yanai. Kupa. Kupa is a box. Shetaman ba. You made hatmana in the box. Meaning, you took a, let's see, have you a picture of that? Mm. Yeah. You have a box. You place, let's say, mochin. You place, let's say, cloths in the box surrounding the pot. Now, you took that box now that had a pot with hatmana inside it with all the cloths surrounding it, and you placed it on gefet. What's the din? So the Braita says, kupa shetaman ba asur laniha al gefet shel zetim. It is forbidden to place that box now resting on gefet shel zetim. So what does that teach us? That hatmana is dafka by zetim and not of shumshemin. Shma minna shel zetim tenan. So from this case over here, true, it's a funny case of hatmana. It's not the normal case of hatmana. Here you're actually making double hatmana. You're making hatmana in a box, and then you're taking the box, and you're placing it on gefet shel zetim. But the Gemara is telling you that's asur. So it's mashma what? Only gefet shel zetim is subject to the hatmana of mosif aval, but not gefet shel shum shemin. Gemara says no proof. Gemara says, le'olam emalach le'anyan hatmana de shum shemin name asur. I can tell you really, shumshimin, also the gefet of shumshimin also produces enough heat to be considered a problem of hatmana. And you're not allowed to put the pot on gefet of shumshimin as well. Ah, so what was that statement talking about that said only zetim? So it says, le'anyan asuke havla, de zetim maske havla, de shumshimin lo maske havla. There was a different discussion. Maske havla means, does the heat rise up? There in that statement that you brought me was you had hatmana already in a box. Now you were placing the box over gefet shel zetim. Gefet shel zetim, the heat that it generates rises. And therefore it'll affect what's in the box. That's why it's asur. However, gefet shel shumshemin, while it generates heat, it's contained. And therefore it's not going to rise up. So in a case where you have hatmana in a box, and you place the box over the gefet shel shum shemin, that'll be permissible. But in shum shemin itself, where the shum shemin are touching the pot itself, then already it could be asur. So therefore the Gemara does not accept this proof because of the specialty of the case. Now, a few things that have to be analyzed, that are drawn out really from this last case over here that we discussed. There is a great machloket amongst the Rishonim between the Ramban and the Rashba regarding how hatmana is, what is considered hatmana. The Ramban says, in this case, for example, you have a box, you have a pot in the box, it's surrounded by, let's say, cloths, etc. He learns that you're placing the box, it's actually sitting in the gefet shel zetim. For the Ramban to be hayav hatmana, it's got to actually be sitting in the actual generating heat item itself. Whereas the Rashba learns that even if, let's say you had your pot on a tripod, and there was airspace between the generating item, for example, you have your pot on top in the box. So you have hatmana on top. Hatmana on top is in a musifabal. Cloth, let's say, are not musifabal. However, on the bottom, underneath you have gefet shel zetim. So even though there's airspace between the mosif aval and the actual hatmana that's on top, Rashba says that that is considered hatmana. That's a very big argument. Does the actual Atmana itself have to, in this case, for example, we have the pot on top that is mutman already in the box. Does the Musif Habal item have to touch or not? Ramban says it has to touch. Therefore, the case where the box itself, let's say, the bottom of the box is sitting in the Gefet Shel Zetim, then we're going to consider it Hatmana Bedavar HaMusif Habal. We're going to disregard the fact that it's in a box within a Musif. We go with the producing item on the bottom. Where is the Rashbaz Mo Mahmir? Where the Rashbaz says, even if, let's say, the Davar She'en Musif Habal is in the box, and it's resting on a tripod, and underneath it is Davar Musif Habal, that is considered Hatmana B'Davar Musif Habal. Even though it's not touching the Musif Habal, it's only being surrounded by the Enu Musif. Actually, that is the way Maran is posek, like the Rashba, Lahmir, in Atmana, in Siman, Resh Nun Bet. But that we'll see maybe in an insight to analyze the practical applications. But that's a very important machloket in Atmana, Ramban and Rashba. A second machloket that has to be discussed. The laws of Hatmana. We have to discuss what type of foods are we talking about. See, when we learned Shehiyah, we learned that, let's take according to Hananya, once an item reached the level of Ma'achal ben Drosai, where it was edible, the minimal level where a food is edible, so then we said that it's permissible for him to make Shehiyah, for example. You could leave it on a unbanked oven, because since it's cooked already, we have no gezerah of Sheme Yachteh. That was by Shehiyah. The question is, do the same rules work by Hatmana? So actually we have over here a fantastic machloket here as well amongst the Rishonim. The Shitav de Rashbam, which is brought down in the first Tosfot in the Perek, and the Rime Orleans, they hold that Hatmana is forbidden on something that is not fully cooked. Which means if it's half cooked, according to the Rashbam, Hatmana is forbidden. The only Hatmana that is permissible, either it is fully cooked or if it is raw. On those items, we're mekel. However, anything that's not fully cooked, according to Shitat Rashbam, is subject to the laws of Hatmana. Rabbeinu Tam and other Rishonim hold Hatmana is asur on all items. Even an item that's fully cooked, it's forbidden to make Hatmana. And that is the basic halakha that's brought down regarding Hatmana. It does not matter how much the item is cooked. Even if it's fully cooked, there's still a gezerah of insulating. While they make a difference in Shehiyah, but in Hatmana, it does not matter. So again, remember Machloket, Rashbam, Rabbeinu Tam, exactly what type of foods we're talking about. Rashbam says even foods that are not fully cooked, and according to Rabbeinu Tam, even foods that are. And the consensus is like Rabbeinu Tam. We can go further now. Again, Hatmana is a not an endless subject, but it's a very detailed subject. We're just trying to hit the Ikar Nikudot that you have to know for for a comprehensive understanding of the basic comprehension of the subject. Gemara continues. Rabba v'Rabbi Zera. Ikli'u lebe resh galuta. Rabba and Nabi Zera found themselves in the house of the resh galut of Babel, the exilarch. Haziza lahu avda. So the rabbi saw a certain servant in the house of the resh galut. Da'anach kuza de maya. He placed a jug of cold water. Apuma de kumkuma. He placed it on the top of a kumkum. Kumkum would be a hot urn. In your Pirush Hais, you see that picture on 402. Yeah. Simple, you have on the left side, you have an urn. on the bottom, which is hot, and on top they placed a cold pitcher or jug of water. Nazhiya Rabba. So Rabba scolded him, as if to say, what are you doing? How could you do that? Amar le Rabbi Zera. So Rabbi Zera told Rabba, Mai shena memeham al gabe meham. What are you scolding him for? What's the difference between placing something that's hot, a hot jug of water, over a hot urn? Which means, if you're allowed to put, the Gemara talks about this later on, a hot jug of water on top of a hot urn, so why should this be any different? Amar le, tell, what are you talking about? Hatam akume kamokin. Over there, it's just maintaining heat. However, haka ulude kamolid. Here, it's actually generating. Now, let's understand what exactly this story, the details, and the back and forth between the rabbis. Now we got the words. Now let's analyze the details. According to the Tosafot, we'll explain first. Tosafot explains this Gemara nothing to do with Hatmana. It's a separate subject. The question was like this. He took a cold water, this Eved, and he placed it on top of a hot kumkum. It was so hot, the kumkum, that had the Eved left it there, it would have the ability to cook. And therefore, when the rabbi, Rabba, when he saw that, he rebuked him, he scolded him. He said, what are you doing? How are you putting this cold water on the kumkum? You might forget it there, and then you're going to come to cook it. The Bizera came along and said, what are you talking about? You're allowed to put, let's say, something, hot water on a kumkum. So Rabba said, what's your connection? What's the comparison? There, it's hot already. Something that's hot already, and all you want to do is maintain its heat. No problem to keep it on the kumkum, because it's hot. Here, it was cold. And here you're generating the heat, so to speak, in order to heat it up. True, the intention was to take it off before, but the issue is over here, you might forget. That's the way Tosfot learns the sugya, and he comes out with a halakha from this, that you would not be allowed to place something that was cold, a cold liquid, close enough to the fire, in a place where it would be able to get cooked, even if your intention is to take it away before it gets cooked. Tosafot is going the shitato. Because if you remember earlier in the last perek, we learned a case that putting water next to the medorah, putting water next to the fire. Tosafot learned that case, you're only allowed to put water next to the fire in a place that it'll never reach Yad Soledetbo. But in a place that can reach Yad Soledetbo, even if your intention is to take it away beforehand, Tosfot said Asur. So therefore he was forced to learn this sugya as well, as we're talking about where the water was placed on the urn, has the ability to get cooked. So Rabba screamed at him, hey, Nazaya Rabba, what are you doing? Take it off the urn, because it's going to get cooked. So the Bizra said, oh, what's the difference? You're allowed to put hot water. He said, what do you mean, what's the difference? What's your question? Hot water is hot already. This over here is cold, and therefore it's going to make it hotter. So therefore you have a problem. That's Tosfot. Rashi, however, who learns earlier in the Masechet that you're allowed to put things closer to the fire, even in a place where it can reach Yad Soledetbo. Shitat Rashi is, so long as you take it away beforehand, it is permissible. So therefore he can't learn this Gemara like Tosafot, because he holds it would be permissible if that was the case, where you're just putting a cold jug on a hot urn and you're going to take it up before it gets boiling. Rashi will say mutar. Furthermore, Rashi must be bothered where we just started Perek Bamet Tomnin, and now already you start talking a subject out of Hatmana. It makes sense that the first case in Perek Bamet Tomnin is going to discuss a situation of Hatmana, or something related to Hatmana. So for that reason, Now she learns this as an Atmana story. Meaning, the Eved went and took the cold jug. And he placed it on top of the hot kumkum. But it was Atmana, which means he draped it. If you look in the picture book 402, he made Atmana. He actually draped it with cloths. And therefore, Rabba came along and said, hey, this is Hatmana. Now, it's not the normal Hatmana, I want to point out. Because normally Hatmana is done on something that's hot, that you want to maintain its heat. Here already, this is Hatmana on something that's cold, that all your intention is to take out the chill. Big difference, which is always the classical case of Hatmana as well. You have a hot pot, you just took it off the kira, it's boiling. You want to maintain the heat in that pot, so you insulate it. Or you want to even get it hotter, so you put the mosifa valve. This case over here, it's cold water. Your intention over here is not to keep it hot. It's not hot. At best, your intention is just to take away the chill. So, Rabbah told him, no, this is going to be asur. Why is it going to be asur? Not because necessarily it's real hatmana, but because in cold water, when you have an urn, this urn is off the fire. An urn off the fire, technically its heat keeps on going down. However, when you put a cold water on top of it, it affects it. And therefore Rabba treated that pot as if it was davara mosif haval. Which means putting cold water on top of a hot urn, Rabba said, even if you didn't drape it, just putting the thing on top, it's domeh lehatmana, because it affects the cold water, because it's going to cool it, it's going to warm it up. And therefore, it's like you're being matmin bedavara mosif haval. It's not actually mosif haval, because if it was mosif haval, it would be asur even to do this on Friday. But we're saying that when you put something cold, obviously something cold gets affected. It's evident the effect that it has. And therefore, Rabbi was saying it's asur midin hatmana. So the rabbi came along and says, what do you mean? We're allowed to put hot on top of hot. He said, hot on top of hot? That's just maintaining it. Which means we're not gozer on that. It's something hot already. You're putting it on something hot. That's not a gezerat hatmana. However, here it's cold. And therefore, it looks like you're being matmin bedavar. And therefore, he was Oserim. So according to Rashi, it's more an issue of Hatmana. Or according to Tosafot, it's not an issue of Hatmana. It's an issue of Gezerah, that he might have left it there until it got cooked. Now we discuss the next case. Comes the next case and says, Hadar Chazya. It was another story, where Rabban and Rabbi Zera were in the house of the Resh Galut, and they saw the Eved, the Paras Dastudar Apume de Kuba. He placed a cloth over the mouth of a Kuba. Kuba would be like a jug filled with water. The Anach Natla Elaveh. And then he went and took a spoon, a ladle, and he placed it on top of the cloth. Now what happened? By placing the weight of the ladle on the cloth, it sinks in. And now what happens? It drapes into the water itself. So again, you had a jug of water. He placed a... You have a picture. You want to look at your picture books? You can see it 403. 403, you see the jug? There's water in there. He placed the cloth on top of it. And he put the... This doesn't look like a ladle. This looks like more like a cup. But however, while you learn it, he basically placed something on top of it that would cause it to drape into the water and get wet. Comes the Gemara and says, Nazhiye Rabba. Rabba rebuked him. Amal Rabbi Zera, Amai, what are you rebuking the guy for? What did he do wrong? Amar le. So Rabba says, Hashta Hazit. You'll see. Lesof Hazya Deka Me'atzarle. At the end he saw the guy took the cloth and started to wring it out. which means he was transgressed the isur of Sahita. And therefore, Rabba was saying, this is forbidden. You're not allowed to cause something to become drenched on Shabbat, because it can lead you to Sahita. So therefore, by you placing that ladle on top of this cloth, you're causing it to get wet, and it's going to bring you to Sahita. Mm-hmm. That is, this Fatimah, the Aharonim ask, what, so Rabba just watched him commit the Isur over here, where he says, well, I wanted to prove a point to the Bizera. Watch, you'll see I'm right. And so he waited till he squeezed his head. See, I told you. And meanwhile, he watched the guy commit Isur. So Sfatimeh learns Chas B'Shalom. He says he had to stop him right before. Which is, he saw him going to the cloth, about to squeeze his head. I told you, see, he's about to squeeze him, and he stopped him. Others explain that could be this guy was a goy. But what Rabba was trying to teach is the Jews that were in the house that this is Asur. And then when the goy came along and squeezed it, you see that? That's why it's Asur. Because when you cause something to get drenched on Shabbat, the next thing usually is to come squeeze it out. Now squeezing would be Sechita, which is a whole discussion later on in the other Perek. Sechita is Asur. It's not one of the 39 Melachot, actually, Sechita, but it falls under the Melacha of Melabin, whitening. That's the way they would clean clothes. They wet them, and then they squeeze them out, and that's the way they become whitened. So it's a toldah of Melabin. Amar le. So now Rabbi Zera was bothered, but he said, "My shena me parvanka." He says, "Why is it different than a parvanka? What's a parvanka?" That she says, "Beged asui lefrosa la gigit." Which means there's a certain garment that I guess was designated that they used to use specifically as the cover of a pot of water. So Rabbi Zera told him, hey, we're allowed to put the parvanka on and we're not worried about this issue. How come you stopped him when he put this sudar? Amar lehatam lo kapide lave. Haka kapide lave. The difference is, since that item is made to cover the pot, we don't care if it gets wet. And therefore, we're not concerned that he might come to make Sahita. But this item that he put over there, it seems it was like his hat. He put something like a garment that he wears. Right? His turban. Okay, good. So therefore, when you put it on, and it gets wet, you're concerned that what? You're going to want to squeeze it out because you don't want it to remain wet. So there's a difference. If the item is designated, that it would be permissible. If not, not. Rashi. Lo kapid ale im sharui b'mayim. You're not makpid if it gets wet. Why? Sharei lekach asui. That's why it's made. V'lo atalei desechita. Okay. Comes the Gemara and says further. V'lo betebin. One of the things that we said that it's forbidden to make hatmana with is straw. Actually, we said straw is only forbidden when it is moist. Ba'amine rav ada bar matna ma'abaye. We go back to Mukse for a moment. The Gemara asks, Mukhin. Mukhin were these cloths. Shetaman bahim. You use these cloths, these soft cloths, in order to make atmana. For example, you wrap your pot in Mukhin. Ma'u letaltelan b'Shabbat. Are they permissible to move on Shabbat? Meaning, do they become, or are they Mukse? What's the question? So the question is like this, Rashi, Mochin. Let's read Rashi together, Mochin. Enan era la'asot mehem labadin shekorin faltar. These cloths were generally designated in order to make a garment that Rashi calls felt. Umuksine lemelacha. Normally, Mochin are mukseh because they're designated to do this process of making felt. Ve'asu letaltelan. And therefore it's forbidden to move them on Shabbat. The question here is, since already you use them for Hatmana, so maybe that shows already that you're not concerned in making felt out of them, because you're using it to make Hatmana on a pot. And therefore it might can be considered as if you now designated it for permissible things. So the question is, while Mukhin is generally Mukseh, What if you took mukhin as generally mukseh on an Erev Shabbat? You use them to make atmana. Does that take it out of its status of mukseh? And now let's say on Shabbat you want to lift up those mukhin directly. Is it permissible or not? That's really the question. So the Gemara says, Amar le, so he told him, V'chi mepene she'en lo kupa shel teben, pomed u'mafkir kupa shel mukhin? Just because the guy doesn't have straw to make atmana, so he was forced to use these mukhin, you think he now took it out of his mind to make felt out of them? Which means, just because he used them, it's because he had no choice. The guy probably would have rather used straw. But because he didn't have straw, now you tell me that he decides to use these fabrics. Just because he used them as hatmana, you're telling me now it's already considered designated, and therefore he doesn't want to use it to make felt, and therefore it should not be mukseh? The guy was in a pinch. The guy probably would have rather not used these items even for hatmana. But because he didn't have tebin, so he used them. That's no indication that in his mind he designated them. On the contrary, after he finishes that mana on Shabbat, he's going to take them and use them to make felt. And therefore, the Gemara wants to say, they still retain their status of mukseh. Correct. Rashi says, Shedameh yekarin. Mukhim are very expensive. In derek bekach. It's not the derek to make atmana. You only make atmana if you have to on these things. And therefore, the lo batel atmana. It's not going to become, so to speak, batel to the atmana. It's still going to retain its status of hashivut, and therefore it's going to retain its status of mukseh. Comes the Gemara and says, lema mesayale. Now let's bring a proof to this concept. Question is, how are you going to get your pot out? So you just have to lift the pot, and the mukhin will just fall, you know, by themselves. You will not be able to directly move the mukhin. Gemara says, lema mesayale, let's bring a proof to this. Tomnin begizeh semer. It says you'll have to make atmana with shearings of wool. Upsipeh semer. Tsipeh semer, as she says, is mats of combed wool. Ubilshonot shel argaman. That would be wool that was dyed purple, and they also combed them. So all these are different types of material. The Gemara says you're allowed to make atmana with them. Ube mukhin. And for that matter, you're allowed to make atmana with mukhin. That's that material that you eventually make felt. Ve'en metaltelin oto. And clearly the statement is, you're not allowed to metaltel them. It means they retain the status of mukseh. So you see mukhin, even after you make atmana with them, they are mukseh. Comes the Gemara and says, no proof. Why no proof? It seems like a perfect proof. Gemara says, no, imi shuma lo idia. If this is your proof that you brought, not good. Hachi kama, because this is the way I can explain the statement. Im lo taman bahen en metaltelin oto. Which means, it's discussing two cases. Number one, you're allowed to make hatmana with mukhin. Period. You should know, if you didn't make hatmana with them, they are mukseh. The en metaltelin oto. We learned it all as one case. That means, even if you made hatmana with them, they are mukseh. No, maybe once you made hatmana with them, it takes it out of its designation for isur. But it says en metaltelin yeh. It means generally speaking. Which means, you're allowed to make hatmana. Period. Now, regarding if you didn't make katmana with these items in the laws of mukseh, these items are mukseh. So then we have no proof to what we're trying to prove. We're trying to prove if you use them as hatmana, do they retain mukseh or not? So therefore, no proof. The Gemara says, Yahi, Maile Mimra. So what's the hadush then? Mm-hmm. Obviously, I need a statement to tell me that mukhin, that are designated in order to make felt out of them, which is used for melacha, which obviously is designated for a work, you have to process it. I need a statement to tell me they're mukseh? What's the hadush? It's obviously mukseh. He says, no, ma'u de tema hazi le mizgah alayu. You would have thought that no, they have a heter function as well. That these mukhin, you're able to lie on them. able to rest on them. So you might have thought that really, even though eventually you're going to make felt out of them, but since they have a heter, a permissible function even now, meaning to lie down on them, you might think that they're not mukseh. Kamash ma'lan, that they are still mukseh. Which means the primary function of them is what? Not to lie down on them. The primary function is to use them to make felt. And therefore they are considered mukseh. So the Gemara concludes at this point that if you use them for hatmana, they still are mukseh, but the Gemara couldn't prove it. The Gemara just said it as a fact. What was the logic of the Gemara? Because a guy decides to use mukhin that are expensive, then what, that shows that he's mevaten et hatmana? No, Hazit, the guy didn't have tevin, so he put it there. But of course, in his mind, its still primary function is not fatmana. Its primary function is to make the felt out of it, which is a isur to produce the felt, and therefore they retain the status of mukseh. Comes the Gemara further. Rav Chisda shara lahadure udra lebes sadya b'shabeta. Rav Chisda allowed to return, the hadure is to return udra would be, let's say, the stuffing, the feathers, to a pillow, the Shabbat. Guy has a pillow, it opened up, so some of the stuffing came out. So he wants to take it and he wants to stick it back in. Rav Chisda said, it's permissible. Etibe Rav Hanan bar Chisda, the Rav Chisda. So they asked the question to Rav Chisda. Matirin be'et asavar b'shabbat. Says you're allowed to untie the neck of a shirt on Shabbat. What does it mean, untie? So if you look at your picture book, you'll see in 409, when they used to send their garments to the cleaners, they used to get it back. The cleaners used to make a knot on the neck where they stick their head in, on that spot over there, on the hole on top of the garment, they would make a certain type of knot. That's where they would return it from the cleaners. Now that knot obviously is not a permanent knot. The cleaners only puts it there, and it's obvious that when the guy gets it, he's going to untie it. So since that knot is not considered a permanent knot, the Braita tells us that when you get that garment on Shabbat, you want to wear it. Matirin bet savar. You can untie the neck, so to speak, and you can wear the garment. However, avalo potrin, but you're not allowed to open a hole, which means, let's say you just have a garment, but there's no hole on top. That's 410. So you want to cut out now, on Shabbat, a hole on top of the garment in order where you can stick your head into it. That is forbidden. Why? That would be one of the melachot on Shabbat, makeh bepatish. You're finishing a garment. How do you finish a garment? The last thing you do is you open the hole, the neck, in order to stick your head in. So that would be forbidden. Ve'en notnin et amuchin lo letoch hakar ve'lo letoch hakeset b'yom tov ve'en sarich lomar b'shabbat. And last case, you're not allowed to place mochin, which is the cloth, let's say the stuffing, not into a kar, a pillow, and not into a keset, which would be, let's say, a chair. So clear, not on Yom Tov. And if you can't do it on Yom Tov, or the most, you can't do it on Shabbat, which is more strict. So bottom line, you're seeing you cannot stuff pillows on Shabbat. Whereas Rav Chisda said, you can. So how does he reconcile? Gemara says, not kasha. Ha behante, ha ba'atike. One case is talking about new pillows, and one's talking about old pillows. If it's a new pillow, so by stuffing it in, you're creating the keli. That's considered what? Mekeh bepatish, and it's going to be asur. But if it's an old pillow that was really a keli already, and some of the stuffing fell out, now you want to put it back in that case, Rav Chisda said, mutar. Rashi says, ba'atikeh, la'aziro. All you're doing is you want to return it. And that's exactly what Rav Chisda said, la'adureh. His language was very precise. He wants to return it into the pillow. Jesus, it was really a pillow already. So that's not considered a problem. But to make a pillow from scratch on Shabbat, that would be asur. Tanya Nameache, we have a right to support this. En notnin tamuchin לא לתוך הקר ולא לתוך הכסף ביום טוב ואין צריך לומר בשבת. You're not allowed to place the stuffing into a pillow or a chair, not on Yom Tov, and also on, not on Shabbat. Nashru, but if the cases where they fell out, meaning they were in the pillow already, Mahazirin oto b'Shabbat, you're allowed to put them back even on Shabbat, ve'en sarich lomar b'Yom Tov. So that's that deen. So we just discussed the deen of pillows. Now we discuss the deen of making a hole in the garment, which we discussed in that braita. Amarav, hapoteach bet asavar b'Shabbat, hayav hatat. If somebody makes the hole by cutting it out on Shabbat, he's going to be hayav chatat. What do we say? Because makeh bepatish. Because he added the final touches. Matkif la Rav Kahana. So Rav Kahana asks the question, ma ben ze lemegufat chabit? Why is this different than megufat chabit, which is the seal that's on top of a barrel? 413, you see a picture of that. You have a barrel of wine, and they used to attach a seal. The seal was attached to it. But the deen is, you're allowed to cut the seal off of it on Shabbat. You take a sword, let's say, and you slice the cover off. Bottom line, you're making a hole. Now you're making it functional to get the wine out. So why, when it comes to a beged, you can't make the hole? But when it comes to the habit, where you have a cover on it that's tarred onto it tightly, you can take it and cut it off. What's the difference? Gemara answers, Amar le Rava, ze chibur ve ze enu chibur. One is attached and one isn't attached. What does that mean? They're both attached. So the explanation is that the garment is totally sealed. It's totally closed. By you making a hole, it's one piece. Now you're creating a garment. Here, originally, it's two pieces, which means you have the habit, and now you fasten on top of it a cover. True, you fasten it tightly, but bottom line, it's considered a keli already. Now all you're doing is taking off the attached cover that was on. That's not considered makeh bepatish, which means to make a hole in the garment that was originally one piece, that already you're creating. Mashenken over here, the habit is eno chibur. It's not considered one, it's considered two pieces, and therefore when you take it off, it's really considered, you didn't make a keli. It's really considered as if it was a keli already, and therefore that would be the difference. Comes to give it up further. Ramele Rabbi Yirmiyah Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Yirmiyah brought a question to Rabbi Zera. Tanan. We learned shlal shel kobsin. Okay, what is shlal shel kobsin? Rashi says that kan leshlol abegadim zeh im zeh ketrim gedolim kedei shelo yovedu. What they would do is, you probably have a picture of that. That's earlier. Okay. Actually, what they did was the cleaners or the people that were washing their own garments, so they don't lose them. They would actually stitch them to each other. So now you have one long row of dirty clothes. So that they would take it to the river, let's say. So it's all one long string of clothes. They would stitch them to each other, so they're all attached. That was called shlal shel kovsin. Okay, kovsin is the cleaners, the ones that are cleaning their clothes. Shlal is the row of kovs that they tied to each other. They stitch them to each other. Of course, after they finish cleaning, they would untie them and they would wear them. Veshalshelet shel maftechot. Okay, shalshelet shel maftechot would be that's 417. There you have a picture. It's a keychain. You have a ring and you have keys around it. Ve'abeged shutafut bekelayim. Or let's say you have a garment that they sew to it kelayim, meaning the stitching of the garment is pishtan, let's say. Let's say it's a wool garment that has stitching that is linen. Three cases. Chibur le tum'ah. All these cases are considered attached regarding the laws of tum'ah. Meaning, if let's say a sheretz touches one of the garments on that row, all the garments become tameh. It's considered one garment. Amazing, Hiddush. Which means the fact that they're tied to each other gives them a status as one big garment. Has to be that way, because if you would not consider them tum'ah, a sheretz, let's say, is an abatumah. Right? Abatumah can touch a keli and make it a rishon. A abatumah can metameh kelim. However, a rishon cannot be metameh kelim. So therefore, if you're not going to consider them one, let's say you consider them separately, then what's going to happen? The sheretz touches this garment. Even though this garment, let's say, will touch the other garment, the rishon cannot make a sheni when it comes to garments. So therefore, if we're saying that they're all tameh, it must be what? That you're considering all as one. The sheretz touches this, they all become rishon letumah. And that's the same thing with the keys. You touch one key, all the keys on the keychain become tameh. Ad sheyatchil lehatir. And how long is it considered one? Until you start untying them. For example, once the guy comes home, and now he starts to untie the garments, let's say, at that point, even though they're still attached, but once he shows already that he's not interested in them being attached anymore, now they're considered separate entities. Alma, so the Gemara makes an implication, shelo b'sh'at melacha namehibur. The chidush over here is that even when he's not using the attached clothes, for example, for melacha, which is why did he attach them? Because when he would go down to the river to clean, so it's easy for him to have them all together, so he doesn't lose any of the garments, so he just sticks them in the water. The chidush over here is, certainly at that time he's interested in the chibur. So for sure that's considered one. We're learning that even shelo b'sh'at melacha, even on the way home, until he starts to untie it, is still considered chibur. Which means, even though technically, you might argue and say, well, now that he finished cleaning the garments, he doesn't care for this chibur anymore. Because it served its function during the melacha. But now that he's finished, maybe it should become to be considered separate immediately. Comes the Gemara and says, no, we see from here that since the Gemara said only when he starts to untie it, even shelo b'sh'at melacha, it's considered chibur. So the Gemara says, Urminu, we're going to ask you a question if that's true. Makel she'asa, or she'asa'uha, assuming that's what it changed it to. She'asa'oh, fine. Makel she'aso yad le kordom. That's picture number 418. Kordom is an axe. It was missing its handle. So what'd you do? You took a regular piece of stick. It's not really designated for a kordom. It's a makeshift. You took it, you attached it into the kordom, so now you have a makeshift handle. Gemara says, Hibur letum'ah b'sh'at melacha. It's only considered attached for tum'ah at the time that you're working with it. Meaning, if let's say the handle became tameh, the entire item, the entire axe will become tameh. Or if the axe became tameh, the handle will become. It's all considered one keli. Because normally, let's say, this piece of wood does not have the ability to become tameh. Wood only has the ability to become tameh if it's a receptacle. This is not a receptacle, this is a regular piece of wood. But since it's attached to a keli, now already, it's considered one with the keli. But when? Only at the time that you're working with it. Because at the time that you're working with it, you're interested in the chibur. So the Gemara says, "Bishat melacha in, shelo bishat melacha lo." And that's a question then on the case of shlal shel kopsin, because by shlal shel kopsin you said it's considered chibur even after you finish laundering them, until you start to untie them. Amar le, so he answered him back, "Hatam shelo bishat melacha adam asui lezorko leben aitzim." Over there, by the case of the wood that you use to attach to your axe, once you stop working with it, what's the intention of the guy? The guy's not interested in it anymore. What does he do with it? He usually takes and he just throws it away, and he puts it amongst all the other woods that he has. So therefore, it only has the status of chibur when you are using it. However, hacha, by the case of shlal shel kopsin, shelo b'sh'at melacha nameh nihaleh, even when he's bringing them home, when he finished laundering them, he still wants them to be attached. Why? De'im etanfu, because they might get dirty again. Now on the way home, let's say something soils the garments. So what is he going to do? Hadar mehavar dehu. He'll go back and whiten them. So therefore, there's value for him to have this chibur until he unties it. So therefore it's considered chibur even shelo b'sha'at melacha. Masha'ekin, in the case of the axe handle, after he finishes cutting the tree, he's finished with it. Then he'll take the axe handle and he'll throw it away. And therefore, in that case, shelo b'sha'at melacha, it's not considered chibur. Besura matnu la le'ashmata mishemet Rav Chisda. In Surah, they stated the following halakha in the name of Rav Chisda. The Pumpedita matnu mishemet Rav Kana. Pumpedita, they stated the halakha in the name of Rav Kana. V'amri la mishemet Rava. What was the halakha? Man tana ha milta de amur banan. Who was the author of the statement that the rabbi said, kol mechubar lo, anything that is attached to something, arehu kamu, it has the deen of that item. Dashi kegon shlal shel kofsim, like we learned above, that row of garments that were attached when they were cleaning them, damrina le'el, Dashi says chibur v'nitma av ze shelo naga abu atuma. And therefore, if one of the garments became tameh from a sheretz, it becomes a rishon netumah as well as all the other garments that are attached. As we explained earlier, if it wasn't attached, if it wasn't considered attached, then only the garment that was touched can be received tumah. But the garments that are next to it, even if that garment subsequently touches it, a rishon cannot make a sheni by kelim. And therefore, the Gemara wants to know, who's the author of this opinion that says anything that's attached becomes kamo, is becomes one? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Rabbi Meir. The opinion is Rabbi Meir. The Tanai, because we learned in the Mishnah, Beta Pach, Ubeta Tebalin, Ubeta Ner Shebekira. Now, if you look in your Pirush Chais, you'll see a picture of this, of Beta Pach. That would be picture number 419. These are all attachments that they place on the side of a stove. The first item is called betapach. They would store a little oil in a little compartment that would come out of the kira. Betatevalin, there they would store spices, let's say. Ubetaner, or they would actually put a flame in a little compartment coming out of the kira. All these are separate vessels that are attached to the larger vessel, the kira. What is the deen? So it says, betapach, betatevalin, betaner. All these attachments that are attached to the kira, shebekira, metamein bemaga, they become tameh through tumat maga. Meaning, let's say something falls into the kira itself and actually touches the base of the kira. That's called tumat maga, through touching. Since these smaller items are attached to the kira, they're considered hibur, and therefore they also will become tameh as well. That's the rule of Rabbi Meir. Something that's attached is considered one. Therefore, if something touched the inside of the kira, that's tum'at maga, a sheretz touched the inside of the kira, everything, the kira and its attachments, become tameh. Ve'en mitameh'in ba'avir. However, if let's say this kira, which is made out of pottery, the normal law of pottery is it has the ability to metameh through its airspace. Meaning, even if the sheretz just went through the airspace of the kira without touching it, it still has the ability to become tameh. However, the Bimir says, tum'at avir can only metameh the kira itself, but not the attachments. So again, ve'en metameh'in be'avir, devir Bimir. Rabbi Shimon metahir. Rabbi Shimon says those attachments are always tahor, regardless of what happens to the kira. So the Gemara explains. Bishlam al Rabbi Shimon. We understand Rabbi Shimon's logic. Kasabari must hold lav kikira damu. He must hold that we don't consider these part of the kira, even though they're attached. They're considered separate entities. So therefore, no matter what happens to the kira, it's going to have no bearings on these attachments. But the Gemara says, "Ela lebi meir." But the bimeir shita is a little difficult to understand. Why? I kekira damu, if you're considering it attached, and therefore whatever happens to the kira happens to the attachments, afilu ba'avir la melitmu. So they should also become tameh through tumat avir. If you tell me it's not considered part of the kira, so they should not become tameh even to tumat maga, which means how could you split? If you're telling me it's attached, it should become tameh whether the kira becomes tameh through maga or even avir. She's a kira is made out of chayres. Chayres can become tameh through tumat avir. So if it becomes tameh and the attachments are considered one with it, it should become also metameh. How can he split between tumat maga and tumat avir? Gemara says the olam lav kekira damu. De oraita from the Torah, they're really considered separate vessels from the Torah. However, v'rabbananu degazru behu, and it was the rabbis that came along and were mahmir and said we're going to be considered them as one in order to put rabbinical tum'ah. So the Gemara says igazru behu. So if the rabbis made a gizra, now we're learning this chibur concept is a rabbinical concept. But fine, afilu b'avina militmu. So they should have went all the way. They should have said mid deoraita from the Torah, it's not considered attached at all. But rabbinically, it's attached, and therefore, whether the kira became tamim tumat maga or tumat avir, it should affect the attachment. Mm-hmm. So the Gemara says, "Avdu b'ura banan hekira." The rabbis needed to make a hekir. They needed to make something noticeably different. Why? Ki hechi delo atel misraf aleha teruma v'kadashim. So you won't come to burn teruma v'kadashim. What does this mean? According to the Torah law, if teruma becomes tameh, let's say a sheretz touches the teruma, from the Torah law you must burn that teruma. However, let's say teruma becomes tameh midrabbanan, only rabbinically. Halakha says you're not allowed to burn it. Because mina Torah it's really not tameh. So we don't want you to just discard teruma like that, burning it, if mina Torah it's really not tameh. But rabbinically it's tameh. So what do? You just leave it. And you let it decay. You let it spoil. And after it finally spoils, you throw it out. So now, the rabbis were concerned. This kira over here has an attachments to it. These attachments, minat Torah, are not considered part of it. And therefore, if the sheretz fell into the kira, minat Torah, these attachments are tahor. Let's take, for example, there was tiruma in these attachments. Minat Torah, these attachments are tahor. Now, midrabbanan, the rabbis came along and said, no. Those attachments is considered one, and therefore the tiruma that's in there is tameh midrabbanan. However, since it's only tameh midrabbanan, you can't burn it. Now, how are people going to know that? How are people going to remember that this law is only midrabbanan? So the rabbis went out of their way to do something different. They said, if let's say a sheretz falls in the airspace of the kira, it's not going to affect these attachments at all. So by making that hiluk, right away the people are going to understand, must be this is a rabbinical law. Because they made a difference, which is if the sheretz actually fell into the kira itself, then the rabbi said, hibur, the teruma that's in there is tameh midrabbanan, and therefore you just have to let it disintegrate. Oh, but we're worried that people might come and burn the teruma in that case. No, they won't. You know why? Because they're going to ask themselves, then why then if it fell through the airspace, the sheretz, you're telling me that the attachments are tahor. Ah, must be that this is Rabbanan, and the first case was also the Rabbanan, so therefore they'll know not to come to burn teruma that became rabbinically tameh. Only question that Tosafot has over here is, that explains the case of the kira with the attachments. So we have a hekir. But what about the case of the shtal shel kobsin, which is one of the cases we had was you have the string of garments over there. So we said in that case over there, minat Torah, now we're learning, there's no such thing as chibur. Each one is separately. Rabbinically, it's considered what? Chibur. So how are you going to know now that this is a rabbinical level of tum'ah? So by the case of shtal shel kobsin, where the rabbis usually make it evident that you'll know that it's only rabbinical. Nafka mina, if let's say those garments touch teruma now, that teruma is only going to be tameh rabbinically, not going to be tameh biblically. So therefore we have to know that you can't burn that teruma. What was the hekir that they made by shtal shel kobsin? So Tosfot says, Abdu rabbanan hekira, that dibur matchil, v'gabe shtal shel kobsin, ika neme hekira, ma she'enu chibur lehazza'ah. Which means, if let's say these garments became tameh through a mit. Halakha says that you have to sprinkle the garments on the third day, and on the seventh day of the purification process. Now, if you hold this hibur, technically all you would have to do is sprinkle one garment, and all the other garments should become tahor. But since minat Torah is really not considered hibur, so therefore the rabbis made it that when you go make hazaah, you're going to have to sprinkle each garment itself. So therefore we show a hekir. So everybody will know that this is the Rabbanah. Because if it was the oraita, you said it's one. So then when you're going to sprinkle it, sprinkle just one. The fact that they made you sprinkle each one, so that already reminds us that minat Torah, these are considered separate. So then we have a hekir by shtar shel kobsin, by the hazaah, and we have a hekir by the kira, that tum'at avir is not going to metameh the outer attachments. Therefore, remember that the terumah minat Torah tahor just made it a banan, and therefore tameh. Therefore, we'll know not to burn it. Comes the Gemara and continues. Tanu rabanan. We have a braita masporet shel perakim. Masporet shel perakim would be a scissors that comes apart, like a cooking scissors that they have, the chicken scissors, for example, where it can be attached and taken apart. Picture 420, you see it. The Ismail Shel Rahitani. Ismail Shel Rahitani, I think we have a picture of that on 422. That's the blade of a plane that the carpenters use in order to sand, let's say, a piece of wood. So the Gemara says, Hibur letum'ah. These items, when they're attached, they're considered, let's take the scissors case, when the attached, the two pieces of the scissors, is considered one for tum'ah. Therefore, if one blade became tameh, the other blade also is tameh as well. It's considered one.
Even if it's separate.
Yeah, no, when they're attached. When they're attached, if one blade became tameh, even though the other blade did not touch the tum'ah, since it's one keli, hibur letum'ah. Ve'en hibur lehaza'ah. However, when it comes to sprinkling them, in the case where they became tameh, let's say by a mit, let's say a mit touched one of the blades, so you tell me the whole keli becomes tameh, but they have to sprinkle it. Oh, when you sprinkle it, there's no hibur. You have to sprinkle each section individually. So the Gemara asks, man of shah, make up your mind. Which way do you want to look at it? Ihiburu, if you're considering it one, even for hazaah, it should be considered one. You should be able to sprinkle one part of the keli, and the other part of the keli automatically should become taor. Ilav hibur. And if you're not considering it hibur, afidu litum'ah nameno. So therefore, it should not be considered a hibur even for tum'ah. Which means, how could you split the law of tum'ah? When it comes to tum'ah, you tell me it's considered one. When it comes to hazaah, you tell me it's considered two. Make up your mind. Is it considered one or two? So the Gemara comes along and says, Amar Rava. Rava explains it. Devar Torah, Minha Torah, from biblical law, Bishat Melacha Chibur. At the time that you're using them, for example, when you're using the scissors, so now already, since you want the Chibur to be there, because that's the only way you could use the scissors when the two pieces are attached, that's Bishat Melacha Chibur. Ben Letum'ah Ben Nazah. Whether for the law of tum'ah, meaning if one part became tameh, it's considered one, or for that matter, if at the time you were using it, let's say, they sprinkled hazaah on it, since at the time you're using it, you want it to be one, it's considered one for all dinim. Ben le tum'ah, ben le hazaah. Vishelo b'shat melacha. Now, at the time that you finished using the scissors, it's still attached, but you finished using it, eno chibur lo le tum'ah, it's not considered attached for anything. Not for tum'ah, and not for hazaah. Meaning, if one piece became tameh, only that piece is tameh. For hazaah as well, each piece is considered separate. So the Torah law is very cut and dry. Bish'at melacha, hibur for everything. Shelo bish'at melacha, hibur for nothing. Now the rabbis came in. And the rabbis wanted to be mahmir. They gazru rabbanan. Al tum'ah shelo b'shat melacha, mishum tum'ah shebishat melacha. The rabbis came along and said, minat Torah, dafka b'shat melacha, it's considered one to receive tum'ah, we're going to be mahmir. Even shelo b'shat melacha, if only one of the parts of the scissors became tameh, we're going to consider the whole scissors tameh. which means we're going to stretch the Torah law of Hibur to receive Tum'ah, even Shelo B'Sha'at Melacha. That's a stringency. The stringency being that even when you finished working with it, Min HaTorah, they're considered separate. No, the rabbis came along and said they're united. And if, even if you one of the pieces became Tameh, we consider the whole scissors Tameh if we have to purify the whole thing. That's a Humrah Midrabanan. Furthermore, they said, Ve'al Hazah Shebishat Melacha. Mishum Hazah Shelo Bishat Melacha. The rabbis went and were Mahmir as well, Legabe Hazah. Meaning, from the Torah law, Shelo Bishat Melacha, this scissors is considered separate. Therefore, you only have to make Hazah on one part. The rabbis came along and said that even in that case, which means the rabbis want you to make Hazah on both parts of the scissors, always, as the Gemara says it, Ba'al Hazah, regarding the law of Hazah, Shibishat Melacha, now Bishat Melacha, according to the Torah, it's considered Chibur, it's considered one. And therefore, you only have to make Hazah on one part. The rabbis came along and said, even Bishat Melacha, you have to make Hazah on both parts. Gezerah, to the case where it's not Bishat Melacha. So the rabbi's bottom line was stringent both ways. They said, for Tum'ah, it's always considered one, and therefore, even Shelo Bishat Melacha, if part of it becomes Tameh, the whole thing is considered Tameh. And for Hazah, even Bishat Melacha, we're going to consider it separate. And if we have to make Hazah on both of them. So that's the reason why the Deen said, Masporet Shel Perakim, Bezma Shereitani Chibur Letum'ah Ve'en Chibur Le'Hazah. That was his statement. It's always considered a Chibur for Tum'ah, which means always Mahmir. And it's never considered a chibur for Hazah. I mean, we're always going to be Mekel. Because you have a Torah law, and then you have the rabbinic gezerah. Amen. 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 Amen.